Hey, Hawkeye fans, Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register for our weekly Tuesday Hawk Central podcast. Today we are talking Iowa Rutgers, maybe a little Iowa Nevada recap. Kennington Smith, my colleague from the Register, joins me as always. We'll have three topics here momentarily, first down, second down, third down. But first of all, just some greetings, Kennington. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm good. Late night on Saturday, but was able to recharge on Sunday. And, you know, we're here on Tuesday. It was a great day of availability. We learned something today, how to pronounce Nico's last name, which we have all been pronouncing wrong for years now. So apologize to him and his family, but it is Regaini. Emphasis on the I in the third syllable. So good. Good get by you to educate myself and the rest of the Iowa contingent on that.
Regaini. I'm working on it. Nico Regaini. So, yeah, working on a story on Nico. Hopefully it'll be up tomorrow online maybe, but obviously his family out in Connecticut. Big family, awesome family, like super Italian family, authentic Italian family. So, the authentic Italian pronunciation, Nico Regaini, that's what it is. He's not bothered by it, but that's the pronunciation. That's how it's supposed to be pronounced. So that's what we're going to do. We'll see if it sticks. And I know it might sound a little different at first, but and we'll see how the TV announcers do. But, we're gonna do our best to be accurate, and that's the goal. All right. So, first down, Kennington, today. We had to discuss this one. You know, last week, obviously, the quarterback issue was number one, first and foremost. I feel like that's to the back burner this week. So our first down topic is the injury issues that are kind of annoying Kirk Ferentz. What did you make of his answers today about injury questions? He just kind of went off on some tangents today where he was just like, I know I shouldn't be bothered by this, but it's really starting to bother me. Basically, I'm paraphrasing that, all these guys keep missing time and it's just, it's piling up now. And I think he's attributing some of that lost injury time now that we saw in the spring, we saw in fall camp, we're seeing now to some of the hiccups we've seen on the offensive side of the ball in particular.
Yeah. I think that for him, and probably fans, the frustrating part is that it feels like the team has been injured for almost 2 years now. You think about what happened last fall going into the season. Kyler Shott breaks his foot. Cody Entz is in and out of the lineup. Justin Britt is in and out of the lineup. And those injuries kind of forced Connor Colby inside. So the interior of the offensive line was kind of under attack. And then you look at what happened this past spring with the defense being mainly injured. And they get healthy, but then you get into fall camp and now you're facing injuries on the offensive side of the ball. And now we're in season and now there's injuries on offense and defense to key players. So it's kind of like if it's not one thing, it's another. And I think the frustration was definitely there. Usually Kirk Ferentz is pretty forthcoming with injury news and kind of his opening statement, kind of like a housekeeping thing towards the end, like, okay, this guy's doing this, this guy is doing that. But we kind of had to pull it out of him as the presser went on, like asking about different guys periodically throughout. So that's kind of what I've made of it. Just his reaction. The biggest news of all, and probably the player that's been at the center of this injury talk, is wide receiver Keegan Johnson, who played last week. And we perceive that to be a good sign, but at least from my vantage point, I'm sure you saw the same. He did not appear to be 100% out there. There were a lot of times where he was kind of subbing himself out and limping on the sidelines, and he didn't come back after the delays. KF said that it was about him having trouble like re-warming up, which is understandable. Obviously, he's battling back from an injury. They had a long delay. The game was in hand, so they ended up taking him out. But it doesn't seem like he's likely to play this weekend. He didn't definitively say that he was out, but he hasn't practiced this week, and that is not a great sign. So that's probably the biggest one, and there's injuries to account for elsewhere on the team, primarily on defense.
Yeah, Kirk Ferentz had a comment today. One of his comments today was about, some guys are playing through injuries. And I think hint in that was some guys are not playing through injuries. And I think that's also part of Kirk Ferentz's frustration. They want guys out there. They, you know, the sign that's, you know, that says the best ability is availability. I think that's where he's at right now with this team. He wants the guys that are available. And when I asked about Brody Brecht, Kennington, that was literally the first thing he said. He said, let me pull up the quote here. I asked about Brody Brecht. I was like, well, did you see some good things in his 36 snaps? Because he only had played 4 career snaps before Saturday. And then what Kirk said was, the first good thing, not to oversimplify it, he was out there playing and competing. So that was good. I thought he worked really hard. So I kind of took that as, and I, you know, maybe reading too much into it here, you know, but putting Brody Brecht number one on the depth chart, to me, that to me was a sign of who's available and who's playing. Nico Reggaini, sorry, I slipped up, is on the 2 line, but, you know, he said he was having a little bit of a slow week recovering from the stops and starts with that foot injury, but he's going to be available Saturday at Rutgers. So you've got those 3. I think that's kind of where they're at right now. Let's push Brecht along. He's only had, I think Kirk said, 6 to 7 real weeks of practice over the time of his Iowa football career, and that's not enough to be a high-level player. So they're just going to push him forward while they have him, I think. And I think that's a smart move. I think you go with, instead of waiting for Keegan to come back, you just got to go with somebody. And I think Brody Brecht's that guy to me.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Brody. And personally, I had not seen him play football, period, not, you know, before coming out here to cover the team. And I was really impressed with how much of a vertical threat he is and the way they were able to not only – I thought of him primarily as – a red zone type of target, a big body that they could use that they haven't had. But he, in addition to that, can also be a vertical passing threat at 6'4", 200 plus pounds that can run downfield and create big plays. So I think that he's a X factor in this offense potentially if he can continue to stay healthy and continue to condition himself and also work on the timing with Spencer Petras. That was another main thing when you go back and look at the tape, and you did this in your DVR Monday, kind of breaking down the deep shots to him. A lot of it was kind of like timing, you know, him like not looking in the right place. The eye placement wasn't there, you know, slowing down, speeding up, those type of things. I think that they're going to correct. And if he can kind of get that part of his game down, in addition to being out there and getting more comfortable, you really have something in him as a receiver. That's going to help out Arlen Bruce, who is shouldering a major load right now as a receiver. It's going to help him create some plays. And then, you know, Nico as well as just a crisp route runner, veteran experience, the most trusted target of Spencer. I don't think that that's a debate. And, you know, Spencer said as much, you know, close friend, trusted target. And he went to him throughout Saturday's game. So just him kind of conditioning and getting back and, you know, getting his feet back up under him is going to be key as well. As far as Keegan goes, you know, this is just my vantage point and my opinion of the matter with him. I just think that he is somebody who has never been injured before. And The injury, the sudden injury, let's not forget that was a unexpected last second scratch in the bowl game. So that happens. And then he has lingering injuries, nagging injuries, a series of injuries, whatever it is that he's been dealing with from that point to now. All of those things, I think that is just as much of a mental battle as it is a physical battle. And he wants to be out there, obviously, and he's pushed himself and he tried to play against Nevada. But I think for him, it's a matter of not only getting his physical right, but having confidence in his body to go out there and perform at that high level. And that's just going to take some time. And it might be frustrating for the coaches. I'm sure it's frustrating for him as well. But that's just kind of the situation that they're in. So I was going to have to push through, like you said, with those 3 top guys. Maybe Alec Wick can kind of take that next step. He was somebody we heard a lot about, but we haven't really seen that come to fruition on the field. Maybe he can continue to be consistent and gain some momentum and get into that top 4. But I think for now, it's kind of a wait and see with Keegan, and you have to look at what you have that's available and, you know, kind of speculate and analyze the offense around that.
Yeah, and don't forget Deonte Vines, you know, is a possibility to return, maybe midseason, something like that, from the broken wrist. So, I don't know. They were high on him in camp. So I think that's the type of thing you lean on, is you just push forward with the guys you got. And if guys come back, Keegan Johnson, Deonte Vines, great. I agree. I mean, Keegan's such a nice guy to talk to. Love his presence on the team. Feel bad for him. It's got to be difficult to not feel healthy. And you know, I'm sure he feels like he's letting the team down. So you're right. That's a mental challenge we need to acknowledge for sure. Last thing, I know we got to cut off injuries here, but last thing on the injury front. I was impressed or encouraged, I guess, that Justin Jacobs could return this week. That window is open. So that leads me to believe, you know, he's got a decent shot then to play against Michigan, which I feel like really need him for that Michigan game. Could really use him this week, too, against the run. But I think that was a positive, Kennington. And Noah Shannon, it sounded like he was pretty optimistic would play, even though he played 5 snaps against Nevada. But I guess we'll see on that front. But Jacobs, that was one people have been asking about for good reason. He's an NFL player, future NFL, and I think that's a good sign for the Hawks.
Yeah, and then moving off of that point, Kirk Ferris talked about cornerback depth last week and the injury concerns there. Brendan Diaz-Fernandez was not available for the Nevada game, but he practiced today, and he's hopeful that he has a chance to be available on Saturday as well. So obviously not a frontline starter, but anything can happen. So, you know, if something were to happen to Terry or to Cooper or to Riley, then Diaz-Fernandez could be a potential option there should he be able to play on Saturday.
All right, second down, Kennington. What possible O-line fixes can Iowa make here on the fly? Kirk Ferentz today did sound like they were maybe tinkering along the O-line, and it certainly has not been pretty at times this year. And, you know, they broke a few big runs. Give them credit for that but it was against Nevada. So, you know, we're not throwing a party here. It seemed to us, eye test-wise, that it was, you know, hey, Spencer did just about all you could ask out of the position. O-line kind of let him down. Receivers let him down. I think we started with the receivers. Now we're moving on to the O-line here. To me, that's a big concern when you got a very, very good rush defense this week in Rutgers over in Piscataway.
Yeah, I believe they're the top rushing defense in the nation in terms of yards per game. Definitely number one in the Big Ten. I don't have the statistics in front of me. That is going to be a huge challenge. As far as what you said about shuffling, I'm going through quotes right now, and Mason Richmond was one of the players available today. And he said, when I asked him about cohesion along the line and rotations, he said, you know, a bunch of different guys can play a bunch of different positions. I think today we had plenty of shuffling around with everybody. So, you know, to your point, they are moving different guys around. I think it was kind of interesting because you asked about Tyler Ellsbury specifically, and we'll touch on him after this point. But you asked about him and where he's at in rotation. I think it was interesting that Kirk said something along the lines of, they're further along in deciding positions in some areas, and others they're still battling it out. So I feel like, you know, confidently that Mason and Connor are going to be the tackles. Doesn't look like anybody's going to overtake Logan at this point, even though Ellsbury is a potential candidate there. It really does kind of come down to what they're going to do at the guards. And there are several guys who are kind of competing with that. And moving on to, I guess it's like a segue into Ellsbury. I've been pretty vocal about wanting to see what he can do. I thought that he looked good in the Kids Day scrimmage. And I believe you had this in DVR Monday that he was the highest graded guard or the highest graded lineman. According to Pro Football Focus. And I feel like he made an immediate impact when he got into the game. So I think that him on that left side, him and Mason seemed to be pretty aligned when he was in at that left side. So that's a wrinkle that I would like to see. Right guard is going to be a little bit of an adventure in terms of figuring out who maybe is best there. But, you know, if it's me deciding right now today, I would go Richmond, Ellsbury, Jones, Jennings Dunker, Connor Colby as my 5.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting five, I'd probably go the same way unless you wanted to kick Colby inside to right guard and give Jack Plum another shot at right tackle. He hasn't played a ton this year, but he at least has that experience. So, that could be a possibility potentially as well. I thought it was interesting that Kirk did point out, he went out of his way to say Ellsbury's also working at center this week. And you mentioned that too, but I just wonder if potentially would they even consider a center change at this point? Don't know. That might be a little extreme, but obviously there's been some struggles with the snaps in that area. Maybe they're looking for answers. There's been some missed assignments for sure. According to PFF again, and it looked that way to me on film too. You always have to be careful when you're criticizing or docking offensive linemen, because you never know if somebody missed an assignment and one guy was doing the right thing. We just can't know that. But PFF did credit two of Nevada's three sacks to Bo Stevens, who's been starting at right guard these last three games. And so that's the position to me where you got to make a decision, because I think Ellsbury's got to be the left guard at this point unless you're going to put him at center. I just don't think the performance has been there. And I think what you said about Richmond and Ellsbury having that chemistry, that was actually something they talked about on media day. Like, we came in with these guys and we have that chemistry. Well, it was just so strange to see Nick DeYoung kind of show up at left guard to me. And I realize, we're not at practice. Maybe they've done that for two straight weeks. But we saw him in a boot at Kids Day. All of a sudden, he's the left guard. We've never seen him play guard in our lives before. He played right tackle last year. So it seemed like kind of a strange move to me. And it didn't work. So I'd like to see Ellsbury. So I think if Ellsbury provides stability, then you're down to one spot, as long as you're okay with letting Logan Jones stay at center, which is right guard. And in that case, you've got a million candidates there. You could put DeYoung there if you really like DeYoung. Maybe that's fine. You could put Dunker there, like you mentioned. Put Colby there. Or you could leave Stevens there. And then, Colby advocating for Plum. So to me, it's like you got DeYoung, Stevens, Dunker, Plum, all options. And then what we don't know about Mislinski. I mean, I thought he was in the competition as well, but we haven't seen him yet this year. So that's where they're at. I think it's just like the receiver position, though. You got to start going with something here and improving. They need to improve fast.
Yeah, especially because the zone blocking scheme is so much about cohesion and moving as one unit. So you kind of want to have your five that are working consistently together instead of having, moving parts. And I know offensive line substitutions are not foreign. It happens across the country. But for this scheme specifically, when you're having young players, you want to have them gelling together. I have been vocal as well about Connor Colby at right guard. I thought that was probably the most immediate fix at moving, at improving the interior. It seems like they really are set on developing him as a tackle. I would agree that that is where his ceiling is the highest. And I think that him and Mason going into next year, maybe even a year after they stay for their senior years, could be, a tackle duo that is really formidable, not only in the Big Ten, but in the country. They keep progressing at this rate. So I'm looking at Jack Plum now as a depth piece, more than anything. I don't know about how much of a fixture he's going to be in the tackle competition, more so if just somebody gets hurt, then they know they have a fifth-year guy who is capable of doing the job. But just as far as him being a consistent frontline starter, I think that ship has sailed, at least for now. And the last thing I'll say about the offensive line, which is going to kind of segue into this next topic, is a big thing for them and finding that right group is going to play on the road. And they've had some misfires at home where the crowd is not that loud. They're going to start going on the road. They're going to play in some hostile environments later on down the road. So you want to make sure that you're having, all of your linemen, as one cohesive, communicating and moving accordingly, and not having those misfires on the road when the crowd can get louder and build some momentum against the offense.
Yeah, you said it there, Kennington. Good transition into our third down topic, which is – But you know what? Let me just back up real quick before we start third down. It is very troubling, I will say, that you've got offensive line head coach, background head coach in Kirk Ferentz. You got Brian Ferentz, who was the O-line coach for many years here, and plus George Barnett, and they, you know, and Reese Morgan's still around, and they still have so many issues. The fact that they have so many issues in the O-line is very, very troubling. Something doesn't add up there, and it's hard to get to the bottom of, you know, who's even playing, let alone deep under the weeds issues like that. But I just, it's a frustrating and ongoing issue that I think we're going to probably end up talking about a lot this year if things don't improve very quickly.
Yeah.
But let's see what they do against Rutgers. All right, third down. We got to move on. Third down. It has to do with that transition, Kennington, that you brought up. The game finished at 1:49 a.m., which, of course, would be 2:49 a.m. Eastern time, body clock-wise, for this week's game. They got a late start on the week. This all of a sudden becomes a short week with their longest road trip of the season. You know, how does Iowa kind of ramp up now for what is not only a quick trip in of sorts, but also a little bit of a sneaky tough trip, because you know Michigan's on deck, and you know Rutgers is just dying to end that 19-game home losing streak in conference play, which is so bizarre. When I went back to make sure that was right last night, and they've won 5 Big Ten road games in the last 2 years, including Michigan State, Indiana, Illinois. There's a couple others I'm forgetting, Maryland and someone else. But they haven't won at home. They have not won at home in any of the last 4 seasons in conference play. So it's a scarlet out. So it's there's a lot cooking, brewing for the Hawkeyes. I'm not going to say this is a crazy environment, you know, because I've been there. It's not, but maybe it will be on Friday. They're 3-0, or Saturday. They're 3-0.
Yeah, and this is their first night game at home, I believe, since 2014. They have a chance to go 4-0 for the first time in a long time as well. So there's going to be some energy in the stadium. I would liken this game to the Maryland game last year, where you have a team that's undefeated. They have a chance on Fox Sports 1 on a national platform to kind of get a signature win over I don't know if I'll call Iowa a blue blood in the Big Ten, but they are a very respectable program nationally. They've had success in the Big Ten. If you're a program like a Rutgers or Maryland trying to assert yourself in the conference, that is a statement win for their program if they could be in Iowa at home on that type of stage. So that's kind of how I'm looking at this game. So I don't know about a hostile environment, like you said, but I think there's going to be some enthusiasm and some level of energy in the stadium that hasn't been there in quite some time. And I think that's going to be a challenge for some of the younger players on Iowa's team, primarily on offense. Offensive line, we touched on that plenty, but you're going to have a player like Brody Breck playing on the road for the first time in that type of environment. I like to see how he responds. You said this in your thoughts column earlier today, that this is the first road game for Spencer Petras in over a year that he would have played start to finish was about a year ago when they played Maryland. So, you know, for him, how is he going to lead the offense? That's kind of why I'm bringing him up. You know, how is he going to bring those young guys along? How is he going to galvanize the group? And I understand that he is a team leader, but his leadership is going to be needed perhaps at another level this weekend. Him, Sam LaPorte as well. And Nico obviously also is in that mix with the receiver room. So I'm interested in that. And then defensively, going on the road for the first time, and I wrote about this today as a part of my story and breaking down the matchup between their defense and Rutgers offense, it's going to be critical for the defense to not allow Rutgers to gain momentum on the early downs. That's something that plagued them against Iowa State. Iowa State was able to get almost 5 yards per play on first down, setting up a lot of third and shorts. If they do that against Rutgers, a team that they know is going to try to run the ball, get some momentum, get the crowd into it, maybe there's an early score or something like that. I think that's kind of where we're going to see like the quote-unquote hostile environment, the crowd energy, like really start to play a factor. So it's going to be critical on both sides of the ball to come out and execute early.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that Maryland game. Yeah, the last time, yeah, Spencer Petras had a start-to-finish game where he left on his own terms. Yeah, it was that Maryland game on October 1st. It was a Friday night. It was an East Coast game, a late game, a night game, like you said, Kennington. Great observation there. And that was Iowa's best offensive game of the season. Petras was 21 of 30 for, I believe it was 259 yards and three touchdowns, no interceptions. Obviously, you know, they had some short fields, but those are good numbers. Those are the numbers you want to see from Spencer Petras. So there's a little bit of good vibes going, I think, on the road with him. I wrote about this in the thoughts column as well. You know, his road splits are much better than his home splits. And I kind of asked him about it, and, you know, he didn't really know why exactly, but I think it does have to do with the scrutiny that he is under here in Iowa City all the time. And I think going on the road is a little freeing, where you don't have to worry about too much. You know, you don't have to worry about booing from your own fans. I say that facetiously a little bit, but yeah, I think he is obviously a good practice player, and he is not as good in the games, at least the home games. So maybe it is a little bit of pressure. I mean, he may never say that, but maybe it's a little bit of nerves. Maybe on the road, it's a little bit more of a, you know, he called it a gladiator mentality type thing, which is something Brian Ferentz had shared with him. And, you know, you hear that from football guys all the time or whatever. But I don't know, something to it, something to watch this week if Spencer has a good game. 8 touchdowns, 1 interception in his career on the road. Obviously, 15 interceptions home and neutral site versus 12 touchdowns. That's a huge difference. And the completion percentage is about 5 apart. Also there. So, you know, I think there's something to it. And you're right. He's the leader of this offense, and it is going to be on the offense to just score enough points because we think the defense should be fine.
Yeah. And looking, looking ahead to the Michigan game, Kirk Ferentz also brought this up today that not only did they have a late weekend post Nevada, but they're going to have another late weekend this upcoming weekend playing at night. East Coast, having to come back, turn around quickly and prepare for an opponent in Michigan. So, you know, not only this week, I think there could be, you know, some compounding effects of like playing late at night, having a quick turnaround. They push their meetings back on Sunday and all that to give the team a little bit of rest. So it is a little bit of a condensed, shortened week in some regards. So it's going to be a challenge this upcoming weekend. And in some ways, this feels like a very, very big game. And I don't know exactly where we range records in terms of our difficulty before the season when we did those rankings, but kind of like the Nevada game last week, I feel like this records game rises in level of importance when you think about what is at stake here. A lot of teams in the Big Ten West started their Big Ten slate with you know, a loss. So there's an opportunity for Iowa to go 1-0, get some positive momentum going. And on the other end, if they were to drop this game against Rutgers and then they're staring Michigan, you know, right in the face with as much momentum as they're rolling with right now, too, you're in a really peculiar position if you're Iowa's football team. So I'll be really interested to see how this team responds on the road and, you know, what I would consider a must-win game.
Yeah, I think we plan on talking a little bit more about kind of the big picture implications of this on tomorrow night Talk Central radio show on 106.3 KXNO, as always, 6 to 7 p.m. But, yeah, they lose this one. It's like, okay, you couldn't beat Rutgers. You're probably not going to beat Michigan, so you're probably starting 0-2 in the Big Ten. Not going to rule it out, obviously. We've seen Iowa beat Michigan here before, but that's not good, especially with Ohio State road trip looming just a couple weeks later. So that's 3 losses probably in Big Ten play at that point. And so that means if you win all the rest, you're 6-3, and that might not be enough to win the Big Ten West. So, yeah, big game for sure this week in Piscataway. So still got 4 or 5 days here to work on your pronunciations out there, folks. It's Nico Ragaini. Think about it like you're in Italian. Ragaini. So we're gonna keep rolling with that. We'll see how that part goes, but any final words, Kennington Smith, as we let the good people go on our Tuesday podcast this week?
Final words. I really liked what you did with, you know, the punters today in your thoughts column. I'm loving how there's so much enthusiasm around it. And I think that that's ultimately going to be a huge part of this game, field position. I mean, these are two offenses that are kind of struggling, two really good defenses, and punters who can flip the field. So I thought that was very timely by you. And I'm sure we'll talk about that more on the radio show about how the special teams will play into it. But that was a really cool thought by you to get both of them talking about each other and all of that, and something I'm really looking forward to seeing in person on Saturday.
Absolutely. Yeah, we I wasn't going to box us into 10 minutes on the punters here on first down, second down, third. We need a whole Hawk Central hour to spread our wings.
Right, exactly.
On the punter conversation tomorrow. So we will do that with Torrey Taylor and Adam Korsak. It is a really fun storyline, a neat story. We'll talk to you more then. For Kennington Smith, as always, Chad Lystico here of the Des Moines Register. We appreciate you following us along at hawkcentral.com. We appreciate your subscriptions. Appreciate your support, and we will talk to you tomorrow night. And then again, post game Saturday night, back in this forum on YouTube. Take care, everyone.